don't even know. Can anyone even hear?
Who's hyped after that intro song?
It's not looking good, bruv. It's not looking good, bruv.
Wow.
We usually have some serious
technical stuff going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I literally said to OSF 2 weeks ago, "You're in charge of this, right?" Like, we spoke about that.
I said that you're doing the audio, right? And then
I said OSF's in charge. And then as we go live, nothing works.
I mean, I thought you were supposed to go on the Rec Radio account and do the audio from there. I thought that was just like
Well,
who are you playing? We
don't have to have a family argument live on the show right now. We can do
Can people even hear us? I don't even know. I mean, I guess hopefully
people can hear us. People can hear us.
Okay, they can hear us. Yeah, welcome to Rec Radio episode 45. A little bit of technical difficulties off the bat, just to keep it in the spirit of how we do things around here. Never perfect. What is it? Measure once, cut twice, or something. I think that's our motto. The opposite of what it's supposed to be. But anyway, we're here today. We made it. We're an hour earlier because we had to accommodate the Rec boys over here who have their own Rec show tonight in London, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yep, at the Fox.
Wow, too bad that we couldn't make it, or I couldn't make it, I mean. But today we got Captain Cole and ISO with us, a tag team duo requested to tag team us. Our first duo on the show here.
Oh, that's sweet.
So we're doing some first here, first noon show, first duo. But yeah, I mean, let's get into it. What's been happening, guys? What are we looking at today? I feel like it was pretty slow today. We did have some scam news yesterday. Was that yesterday? Days are kind of funny for me.
2 days ago, I think. Right.
2 days ago. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Monday morning, baby. We started the week off
strong scams.
Yeah.
Reportedly. Oh, and I'm already skipping, like, because we're already past the 5 minute mark. I skipped our sponsor. Oh, Seth, can you intro our sponsor here?
Yeah.
Codes. We're doing things in reverse chronological order today.
As you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, one of the largest crypto casinos out there. You can do everything from sports betting, futures trading, NFT lending, trading, etc. Any degen activity you want to do, check out rollbit.com. We have two codes to give away as usual. The first code is ISO RECT 3912. ISO RECT 3912. And if you guys want to watch this show live on video as well, check out our YouTube channel. Just type in Rec Radio on YouTube and it should come up.
That's false, actually. That's only for video on demand now.
Oh, shit. You want to watch it live on Twitter? Yeah,
a little bit of misinformation to go with the theme we were talking about a second ago. Reportedly, it's on YouTube. But not.
You're getting fired. You're getting fired for next week.
This Cointelegraph news the other day. I don't know who tweeted out. Somebody who worked there said the ETF's approved, the BlackRock spot ETF. But turns out, I don't know what their source was. I think they was just,
there was no source.
The source, I made it up.
Yeah. No, I was sitting there like at the Bloomberg terminal, like, what the fuck? I haven't seen anything. How is Cointelegraph like breaking this? And Bloomberg doesn't have a scrap of it 5 minutes in. So I made a little bit on the short, but
did you see the whole Medium article they put out on like what happened? And there's like some random Telegram group and some guy just puts in like, and then it's like deleted account.
Yikes. I mean, I think that's pretty illegal to trade off that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I doubt Cointelegraph traded off it. One would think they would.
Is it illegal, though?
It's not illegal to, like, report that shit like Cointelegraph did. Like, obviously, they'll just have less trust. But it's illegal to fucking front run it and break it.
But is it $2 million P&L they had? It's not a security. So, like, a lot of security.
It is absolutely still illegal.
Is it?
100%.
Yeah, that's illegal, guys.
Yeah, like you can't.
We used to have.
It's market manipulation.
Market manipulation for securities, though. I think I don't know.
If you live in the U.S., you cannot do this. I mean, or probably other places that have any rules at all. Why am I so red? Jesus Christ! I need a new camera. That's for another topic. But yeah, so they're just breaking Telegram. It's not illegal by Coinbase, which is true.
That was my best day of the week. I was just out at lunch and it happened. And I was like, what the fuck was going on?
Yeah.
But it's Did you get caught in it, KBM? It feels like the sort of thing that, I mean, people would have been blown out on shorts, right?
I don't, like sit in shorts and just soak. Like, I'm not just, like, sitting soaking, waiting to get blown the fuck out.
You don't?
No, mine are, like, short-term scalps and stuff like that. Unless they're going in my favor, then I'm, like, holding it. But Bitcoin was, like, up 2% going into that. Like, somebody front-ran the shit out of it.
It was happening all weekend. There was clues. Exactly. No matter what the news was, there were clues that the thing was going to rip.
Yeah, it didn't look like a short at all.
Market was net short.
Yeah, market
really has been net short. Yeah, yeah.
All the stuff, the deltas on high block, whether you believe it or not, liquidity theory, like I was super vocal that this shit was going up. Because especially ETH, I got the trick. Okay, so I didn't trade Bitcoin. I got ETH. Like, fine, you make money both ways. But like, you never know what the catalyst is going to be to create a liquidity event. Whether it's to the upside or the downside, the way you figure out how you want to position is who's off sides, right? So the market participants were clearly off sides all weekend. Everyone was super bearish. And you just knew that, like, and we had Skew on our stream yesterday. Like, he was like, Binance was shorting for a month, right? Like, that guy really knows his stuff, like, more so than Zorn and I. And we've kind of tried to dial in our own thing, but it was clear now, like, you just had a massive liquidity event to the upside. Like, why are we going to go up? Like, last night there was 8 billion in longs on high block. If you're looking at the most granular data, like, and like was a short because it's just, how do you create pain points against the masses, right? Masses were short, rip them upside. Masses are long. Everyone thinks it's going to go 32K now. Probably goes down to weekly open 27.1, maybe 27.5. Short, like you just trade level to level and then you reassess when you think the OI is built up again, and then you have the opportunity to step in. And that's like a high confidence interval trade that I typically do. Like, I trade less, but I wait for those moments because they're variables that I look at. And if everything matches up, like, I step in like hard. You can get super tight on your risk, and you can also just, like, if you've back tested those things and you look and you say, like, this is where, you know, the liquidity event's going to happen, then, like, it might be like, dude, that we were in a range for like 45 days, like, down there, right? ETH ran the previous monthly low, reclaimed it, reclaimed the Monday low. You could have gotten in 1530 and put your stop at 1515 and targeted the previous weekly high at 1640. You didn't even need to take 1700. BTC had a crazy one that ripped super high. So, like, that was a little, but most people were looking at 29.3, like, fine, you got 30. Like, but if you came in like on the monthly open at BTC at 26.9, knowing people were off sides, like, fine. Thanks, Cointelegraph. Like, you never know where it's going to come from, right? Like, so who knows, next week an ETF could be approved and everyone's like, shit, you know, like, it's just like.
I saw Novogratz came out and said he still thinks they're going to be approved this year.
Yeah, let's short that today. Swear to God, like, all of them. But I do agree that it's inevitable. But, like, fine. Like, is it? It's a, what is it, Zoran? 90% chance, 10th?
Like 80% in like 80. January to March versus like 20% before the end of the year, right?
Yeah. So you literally have to play liquidity level to level right now. Like, I think, like, not even having a ton of capital, like, in the market right now, it just doesn't seem like the time to step in. So just, if you can make money trading level to level, like, kind of KBM, just taking scalps, and like, you're surviving, right? Who knows how long this bear market lasts, but if you can survive it and, you know, go do other stuff, take some trades, and then you're winning versus the majority of the population, in my opinion. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it did feel terrible. What was it, on Friday? Like, I think Bitcoin nearly touched like 26K. ETH was 1550 area. Like, it just, and you had all the charters coming in. All the moving averages were rolling over. It kind of felt like, oh, you know, this could now,
it's over
quite a lot.
Yeah, I probably hated the bottom.
It was like turbo bear sentiment.
Oh yeah, actually, can we bring up that tweet?
I think I might have tweeted the bottom. I don't know. Probably. I wasn't even trading it. I was just like zero.
I think you called for 20K Bitcoin and what was it, 1K ETH?
I think, dude, I called for 18K BTC.
Oh, I forgot. That's a different day. Like, I'm minutes a minute. I can't.
It was the exact lows. It was the exact lows, I think.
It was. It really was.
So let's go into what you said, ISO. So, like, you're obviously advanced at looking at things like high block. How do you know how someone's offside? Like, let's go into the granularity of, like, how you looked at something like that on the weekend and you knew people were offside at that level. Maybe we could bring up high block. I don't know if anyone,
yeah,
like,
maybe talk about what it is too, yeah, for people who don't, yeah, know.
Yeah, all right, so maybe we just take a step back a little bit. I don't know, do you want us to, like, talk about how Zorn and I met him in 2019? He's become my best friend and business partner.
I think it would be good because we didn't really know why.
Yeah. I mean, usually that's actually how we started, but we got thrown for a loop with the audio issues, and now that's, we're just
right, I'll take off my arena shades because now we're doing problem stuff.
Well, let's talk about how we got both of you on then first and what's going on here for sure.
Yeah, so for the way that I look at the stuff is largely around, well, it starts with, like, the technical levels on a chart. So whether it's support and resistance or Fibonacci, like retracements up and down. And then we use high block as a way to, like, there's something called a cumulative lick delta, and that's going to basically tell you all the positions and the net side of one of them, right? So if the market is overly short, you're going to get a red delta, and that's going to spit out a cumulative lick number, which you go on Twitter, people make fun of it all the time, but it's theoretical lick. Okay, here we go. I'll pull up my high block.
It's essentially CVD for open interest and liquidations.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So those bubbles represent different pain points, and you can get more granular on the chart by, like, adjusting that. And so if you see that the market is overly short with red delta right here, right? And to this tweet, I was looking at Fibonacci around 26K. And I think, what did we go to, like, 26.5, 26.3? We never really went underneath that. I started to see the market was getting, like, even more short. It was on there. There's a level, like, you're coming into support, but this is also a potential higher low. And so you started to see, like, I forget how many it was, maybe 6 billion or something in shorts on Bitcoin. That to me is, like, or whatever that number is, like, that's, people are off sides, right? You're coming into a Fibonacci around the chart that could be a point of interest for a potential higher low, and the market is overly short. It can show up in funding at times. When you have that degree of confluence combined with this, also looking at open interest levels. So there's a number of factors that go into it, but, like, the most simple way to describe it is, like, who is offsides. If the delta is that red and it's consistently red, price is not going down, people are continuing to short it, there's a high probability it's going to squeeze. On the long side, if people are longing it and the deltas are super green, right? Like, we've seen histories of 15 to 20 billion in longs, like, on Bitcoin, it starts to become, like, a distributive pattern up there. Like, last night there was 8 billion, right? So any move up into 29K, if you took the top of the wick on whatever 30 down to whatever that was basically a 50% retracement back up into liquidity and more offsides participants, right? So, like, longing that much of a green delta with the knowing people are that long is not a high probability long. Like, it's super cut and dry with red and green for me. And then I use Fibonacci and SR to kind of, like, dial exactly where I want to see. But you also have to understand there's an element of time to these things where, like, sustained green or sustained red means it's a buildup of OI, right? So we were seeing that in both ETH and BTC prior to the weekend. We saw, like, during the weekend, clearly there were some signs of accumulation. Do we know if that person knew that Cointelegraph was going to be the catalyst? Do we actually... was it actually, like, maybe there's an ETF coming and they're positioning and Cointelegraph just did something erratic? Like, I don't know, but there was something going on in this data that I look at that made me think that price was going to squeeze. Now it looks like price on BTC particularly is probably going to go down because late longers are not getting rewarded. And ETH BTC actually is, like, kind of interesting right now because ETH, I think it was outperforming a little bit earlier today. But the market was actually short ETH yesterday, right? So things are translating into price that we look at on high block and liquidity theory. Zoran can touch on this. I mean, I might not be a good explainer, but
the way to just dumb it down is like, if you look at it from those charts you were showing, you know, if you see big green deltas, it's kind of like a giant CVD tape. When you see it gets some sort of peak, obviously don't long green, sell on green, buy on red, similar concept. It's very dumbed down that way, the way we look at it, at least.
Yeah.
Everyone. Yeah, it seems like it's really good for range trading, especially this market, because
super.
Yeah, no, so liquidity theory is only based on range trading. You don't want to do it in a trending market because the market's not the dynamics of the market aren't shifting based on positioning. It's more based on a larger trend. So yeah, it's really just for range trading when price is trapped between two swing points.
Essentially. Yeah, I feel like I've noticed this a lot. It's a super high hit rate and quite reliable, especially if you break it down and keep it simplistic like you guys are. So you don't use this if the market's like trending at all.
Okay. No, so that's the interesting thing about Zoran and I. I'm a range trader, liquidity driven, like hit it on range low, range high deviations. And he's like more seasoned in trend trading with Ichimoku. So me understanding Ichimoku and trend, the biggest skill you can have in this market is understand when you've switched from a range to a trend. Liquidity theory will not work in a trend. You could build the deltas up super high, like crazy on the long side.
Yeah, you can see them get to like 30, 40 billion before they actually mean revert. And at that point, you're just like picking tops or bottoms, catching knives.
Yeah, and that's because you not driven market versus perp. And so that, you know, going back to skew, like his analysis and the way he looks at things with the divergences between spot, like CVD and perp, like all that, like understanding who is the aggressor? Is it spot buying or is it perp driven, right? Perp driven things create large deltas, which are essentially exit liquidity to dump on market participants. If you see spot buying this, and you'll start to see it in the premiums, like Coinbase being higher than perps, or looking at the mark price versus the actual perp price, you know that it's a more so a rally. And you could kind of see that in some of the spot exchange prices versus the perp prices like last week and before, which is why like he notices and people can notice that like the market is shorting while there's someone accumulating. So clues, and they're not 100% hit rate, but like they're pretty good because you're starting to see what's happening behind the scenes and like really understanding why price moves to certain areas and how it does, right? There's price action traders who sit on charts and like SR levels and great, but a deeper understanding, or at least try to, of like, who am I in the arena with and like, what are they doing? Right. Cause I'm retail, but there's whales out there. And how do you ride on their backs?
How, I guess a lot of this stuff and a lot of this data and metric that you look at is trying to give you some idea of like predictability and like, it's like, okay, now I have like all these different data points, I can formulate a view on like what the next move is going to be. How, I guess I have two questions. The first question is like, on a per trade basis, how accurate do you tend to find that it is when you make your trading decisions? And the second thing is like, you know, all this stuff is just so data driven. Why is it not possible? And this probably does exist, that someone just puts this whole thing into like a fucking model and you just run like a bot that executes these trades based on confidence levels, basically.
I think there are. I'm not smart enough to do that. I'm a button clicker and I'm like a discretionary trader. Like I haven't subscribed to AI and all that stuff yet, just because I think there's a human element and a big gut part of a lot of this. And that's like you trusting yourself, being disciplined with your decision-making, knowing that all these things hit and you need to press the button. Like, I don't think I'll ever be like a bot trader, but yeah, maybe Zoran can talk more about that.
I think it's more driven about, you know, we're all gamblers at the end of the day, right? Traders are just systematic gamblers, hopefully, with the system of sorts. So, you know, as a discretionary trader, I'll use these metrics and look at them and, you know, assign, like you said, like a confidence interval to the trade. But it's really like, for me, it's always been less is more. I like to take bigger trades and hold them for longer periods of time. It's just what works for me. Not like KBM scalping, that's fucking mint. I prefer to just bet big and then walk away and then check back in a month or two, see if I'm right, and you know, eat the risk, eat the drawdown, whatever it may be.
But, you know, I do think a lot of these liquidity metrics, they overlap, you know, someone who's looking at order flow versus high block versus just reading the tape. There is confluence and overlap with between it. And it's really just about you as the individual, if you are a discretionary trader, to kind of pick and choose what works for you and then pick it with your system, obviously, and then act on that. So it's very simplified for me, just taking trades based on data that I believe has shown time and time again that plays out a certain way over a certain period of time. And just, you know, going with it.
I guess the answer to the bot thing is, like, you have to, at the end of the day, you still have to assign parameters and weights to different data points. And those are the parts that are subjective and people decide themselves on like a discretionary basis. So it's not like you can just create a perfect bot, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's people out there who specialize in that. I think you just have to understand where you sit and what you're comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with bot trading. I don't understand it enough, and I like being in control versus like a computer. And maybe it has a higher hit rate or better percentage over time, but that's just like not who I am.
Yeah.
It also removes the emotion. I think a lot of people, especially discretionary traders, don't really want to, you know, tell themselves or show themselves what their actual hit rate is, you know, their expectancy. They're kind of shy away from it for obvious reasons. But yeah, I do agree that, you know, I think most people would do better with bots. I just, people think, don't have the time or confidence or patience to actually build one out and, you know, describe to someone or a bot what their parameters are for executing trades.
Yeah, for sure.
They change as well, right? Like, I think people's, what works has to adapt with time. I don't know what that is.
100%.
But, right. So my question is,
yeah, that's certainly changing. That's the thing. Once you become complacent, it's like you've lost, right? So you have to, like, I will cut trades really fast if I think that if it's like, you know what, this just isn't working, and I've lost on it, but I've also saved myself money, right? Both ways. But, it's like I'm pretty fast to cut trades because the setups I like to keep are really tight, but it's a gut thing. So like the bot doesn't have the gut thing, and the gut thing comes over time, like trusting yourself, in my opinion.
So what do you think about the market now? Like there was a lot of spot buying over the last week, and it felt like, maybe, do you feel as though we're breaking out of this trend right now? And if so, like, what are you looking at Cole? Like,
So just from like a pure price perspective, I do think, you know, just where we are cyclically in the Bitcoin cycle, I am looking at some sort of capitulation event to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know at what price. I want to go out and say 18K yearly open. That's like my giga bullish price, because I just want to get super long from there. But I treat this as a cyclical market. You know, it operates on a 4-year cycle driven by the Bitcoin halving. You know, we're about 6 to 7 months away from the halving. You usually pump a couple months into that. So I am expecting some sort of capitulation event. I do think everyone's kind of gung-ho on the Uptober meme. I think chop or down is more likely. So I really do think 17, 18 will eventually happen. It doesn't have to happen from here. Obviously, that little tweet there was wrong. It went up 30K first. But, you know, the thesis still stands that I'm looking for capitulation. And then in terms of the metrics, the one thing I've always looked for, this is like 9 for 9 in my almost 10 years in the space, it's looking for backwardation, which is essentially where the futures price is at a significant discount to the perpetual price or the spot price. And that's usually like a $300 to $500 difference. And when I see that, it's just like the all-in max long trigger. I think I went to see KBM play in South Beach with Ponzi and Exit Lick. And I was like, this was like March 19th, but BTC was at 19K. We just had that like higher low. And I was like yelling at them, max fucking long, guys, get max long. We have backwardation, just get fucking long. And you know, what was it? A day later, we went up to 24K. So yeah, I'm looking for a backwardation as my like trigger to get long in this quote unquote fabled bull run I'm expecting next year.
Was that in March?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
was skiing and we were in the chat, and that actually was a TD9 sequential buy on the daily on ETH and BTC.
So you really think there's a capitulation coming still? I mean, that, I think for that to happen, you need like some serious external macro forces. So does that mean you're also bearish on, you know, equity?
Yeah, I don't know macro. I'm not even going to pretend that I know macro. I actually go to ISO for that. I know jack shit. I was born in crypto. It's all I've known and traded. But I do know that you have some sort of cleanse. And if I think about like what are the possible catalysts, it would probably be either like Mt. Gox, Celsius, or something to do with like FTX creditors selling, some sort of giant spot driven event.
Yeah, it's almost like.
But I do think it's
kind of felt the same way. But you can also kind of look at that washout that happened from FTX and 3AC and all that shit as sort of. Was capitulation too, even though what?
I don't disagree. That definitely was capitulation, but I still think we get, you know, a higher low, a retest of those lows before the inevitable, you know, golden bull run, so to speak.
I think you get 23K and then it's up from there.
Could just be chop, right? It seems like chop is also going to be enough to cull a lot of the fat and just murder everyone who's sitting around.
Time-based capitulation.
I'm not immune to that. There you go. That's another form, right? Definitely doing it in my wallet.
How do you guys think about deploying risk for something like that? Like in my mind, and I actually don't disagree. Like I don't look at things from a technical perspective, but I don't disagree that I think we could see a move lower until we see that like great big move higher. But also in my mind, it's like fuck. Like if I'm wrong, I don't want to like sell short into it, and then you just get that big move higher, because then you're going to be in a much more difficult position. So how do you guys think about like deploying your capital and running a risk? Like, do you always have the spot long versus the stuff that you trade, or are you just like fuck it, like I think I'm right, so I'm going to take that risk, and if I get confirmation that I'm wrong, then I just end up having to get like forced buy in at a higher level? Like how do you deal with that, I guess, like the fear of like, oh shit, I'm wrong and we had this big gap up which I didn't expect, and now I don't know if this big gap up is like the start of this big bull run or is like is a, you know, fake out or whatever?
Yeah, so I play things much differently than most human beings. I'm an absolute Bitcoin maximalist. I have been for the last 10 years. I keep 90% of my net worth in BTC. So whether I'm wrong or right, I kind of ride out the highs and lows of BTC. So yeah, if my, you know, my margin trades are wrong on the short side, I am ginormously spot long. It's really inconsequential to that sense. But yeah, I'm always a bull in bearish clothing if I am bearish. This is, you know, one of the greatest assets to ever grace our beautiful planet and markets. So I'm all about being long at all times in some way or form, shape or form. But yeah, I don't think that, you know, if you have, you're trying to deploy risk and figuring out how to time the bottom, I think you should always have some sort of spot long exposure. But when it comes to levering up and, you know, adding margin to take, you know, different higher position trades, then you kind of wait for these capitulation events. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, is I'm not deploying any margin on the long side until I see, you know, these negative 20-30% daily candles or whatever the case is.
Yeah, I mean, right now, like, it's not, I mean, you know when to step in, like, and to like really put some capital to work. Like the market doesn't really feel like that right now. So the capitulation events, I have a different opinion. I honestly don't like, here's why, right? You had a global pandemic and you had the whole, like that is like what bears like literally dream about. It happened, right? Where'd the S&P go to? 3490, 3% retracement of like the whole entire move from COVID. What do you want? What more do you want than that? Right? Like, and then did anyone think the start of January this year, risk was just going to trade up in the face of every single bear? We went down for a year. We probably go up for a year. The market's probably up for the rest of the year, in my opinion. And contrary to popular belief, whoever thinks that, crypto trades in a vacuum by itself right now because of all of the regulatory issues that are going on. So the correlation trade that everyone used to do didn't work. It worked for a little bit like this year, but like, no, it doesn't work. Like you could, I mean, even just looking at the dollar, I mean, like hedge on inflation, like all this stuff, like crypto, if you treat it as like just a level to level liquidity driven market outside of all of these other factors for this year, you probably had a much better trading outcome than trying to trade it against risk, because like it's not correlated, right? Like, so especially on like the ETH side of the trade or even BTC, like tech AI driven moves in NASDAQ become much more attractive and high beta versus anything in crypto, because people know they're not going to have regulatory pressure. They know they're not going to lose the exchange venue. Like every headline is literally about how crypto, the ETF stuff, but like SEC delaying everything, denying everything. Now it's connected with terrorism. I mean, they tried to blame it for the banking crisis. Like, you had every bad thing against it, right? Do I think that you will break that correlation? Yeah, I do. I don't know when it's going to happen, but if it's going to start to come, it's probably maybe going into the end of this year, and you could have a similar effect of what you saw in January for crypto. How that translates into other risk markets, we'll see. Talking about a looming recession, well, here's the deal. Core inflation rate is what, 4.1 or 4.7, right?
Yeah, and 4.1, yeah.
Yeah, right? A year ago, like 8%. And if you look at the financial conditions tightening right now, they're about the same level, like in terms of that on chart. So how is the Fed going to continue to raise rates when inflation has come down? Sure, employment's a whole nother thing. Like, if they pause one more time, I think it's an indication of that, like, that's peak rates, right? And so peak rates, is that where Bitcoin starts to move and it becomes more attractive? Are you going to get a washout below first? Like, someone positioning in the spot basis right now is saying, like, 28K, but I think it's going to 42. Do I want to wait to buy 23? Like, that's some of the mindset that I think some of these investors could have who aren't margin trading or actually allocating, because they're anticipating high probability that a Bitcoin ETF is coming. The washout of a huge equity move, to me, you just had, like, essentially another war start. You had oil go to almost $100, came back to 87 or something like that, right? Mostly supply side driven, but hasn't really gone up. That dollar sitting at 106. Like, I just, like, what's the next thing that's going to make equities go down 20%? Like, I don't know what's going to break, but, like, I think you had a chance to be a bear. It worked. And now they're fighting, like, an uphill battle. I think markets can chop a lot. Like, if you just look at S&P right now, it could just sit between 50 and the 200-day moving average and trade a range. But, like, it's hard to see, like, the capitulation event that people want. People want these things, and they got it. So, like, I don't understand, like, what's going to be the huge, like, you know, hammer down on all this stuff. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, that's my fear as well. I think everyone's waiting for a really easy setup. And what you see is that this is looking like increasingly like not an easy setup. It's looking like, oh, we're kind of chasing it as it goes towards 30K now. And my view is that 90 days until these ETFs, like, it doesn't matter. I mean, you saw what happened with the ETH ETF, right? I think we've got like 15 million of AUM. It was barely anything. I think the Bitcoin ETF massively disappoints, but there's no doubt in the 15 days, over 2 weeks, 3 weeks before you hear that, all your friends are going to be like, oh, is this the time to buy crypto? And you're going to be like, okay, this feels like everyone FOMOing in. And I think people are going to chase it here, even though it's not that perfect setup. And that capitulation event, you really just want like Binance going down. Because I personally think a lot of the other capitulation events, they kind of play into Bitcoin's hands here. Like, we're not correlated to stocks really at all this year. Like, we've had very, very low correlation, but we do have correlation to when shit hits the fan, whether it's war or some sort of banking crisis. Like, people tend to buy Bitcoin. So it's difficult to work out what that capitulation event is. And I do think that you're going to get this. I don't think we're going to get a blow off top. I don't think we're going to like 40, 50K on these ETFs. I think it's going to be a buy the rumor, sell the fact. I think for the next 90 days, I'm scared to not be long, because I think that you could dismiss it.
Yeah, I mean, I think like crypto is an identity crisis right now. If you look at all the iterations of what Bitcoin is supposed to be like good at, especially the inflation hedge, like, well, that was a fail, right? Digital gold, but it goes through these waves of like, yes, it works. No, it doesn't. So I mean, the ETF is obviously the most like important one. But you also have to understand, why does someone want to own Bitcoin, right? Why are people going to allocate to it? Is it digital gold? Is it an inflation hedge? Is it a flight to safety? Like, because it's a chaos asset, it's a toss up. Like, who knows? Whatever is going to happen, like, I don't know. But it doesn't really have a place right now for me that makes sense for people to be like, oh, I want to own this. Like, when the war happened, like when the Hamas event happened and everyone claimed it was a chaos asset and like it was going to go to 30K that weekend. No, like it just, it didn't translate, right? So then Larry Fink goes on TV yesterday or whatever, and then like he's calling a flight to safety. If it was a flight to safety, it would have already happened, right? So it's just like, what is it, delayed? Like, I don't know. I do think that...
I don't think it needs, though. I don't think it needs a like identity, though. And that's like the thing is like the narrative always pushes the... Or show me the price, I'll tell you the narrative. BTC, you know, perpetually undergoes different narrative changes. So whether it's, you know, hedge against inflation, chaos asset, whatever the case is, it's just the current meme, right? At one time we were talking about, you know, Luna underpinning or BTC underpinning Luna, and that it was a hedge for... Yeah, there's just like so many whatever stupid narratives, but the point was like that was the story for price. So right now when there is no story for price, it's probably actually the best time to start allocating, because as soon as everyone starts, you know, gets hold of a narrative, that's when you want to kind of distribute on them. But to your point before, Mondo, about you know, the potential capitulation event and Binance being that potential one, I don't think it is, just because I think we've heard it, the market is priced in the Binance DOJ event, I think, thus far. And then when it eventually does happen, it'll probably be some, you know, couple $1 billion fine, a CZ steps down. It'll be like a wick to the downside, but I don't think it'll be giant capitulation. I think the day closes green and you kind of go up only from there. So that's almost like a buy the news event for me when we do get the Binance DOJ news.
I think all of these are buy the, like once that setup happens, you just got to buy it, like whatever the fuck it is. But yeah, I do agree with you. I think the Binance one is well telegraphed. And I actually don't even think Binance is like, yeah, I don't think it's insolvent. And I think it's,
No,
it clearly did some bad shit. But I don't think.
But so did Tether, and they're still standing. It's Lindy as well.
There's gonna be a fine for a couple billion, and then they walked away with way more than that. And they'll go about their lives, right? So I think one thing that was touched on a lot in this, in every little nugget of information you guys gave out, was how the market does change and how you have to adapt as a trader, because you never know like what the narrative is gonna be or when your current trade is gonna stop working, like a correlation trade. How do you guys focus on adapting and changing with the market? Like, how do you change your risk profiles? When do you decide to slow down if something's not working? What's like the backbone of that area you're trading?
So for me, I think it's actually a really good question. It's something I've actually struggled with this past cycle more so than other ones. Coming in from 2013, the 2013 to 2017 cycle, I approach risk differently. You know, we BitMEX coin margin swaps were like the status quo. Looking at the metrics for coin margin swaps was kind of how I operated on, especially this backwardation I keep mentioning, and funding rates was all coin margin. And then when FTX came around, it kind of diminished my edge because I hadn't heard of, you know, stable coin swaps. And the idea of metrics looking at stable coins. So the point being is adapting is something that's something you have to be very honest with yourself. And I kind of coped for, you know, a good first part of the last cycle, ignoring all these metrics. And then it wasn't until, you know, I'm watching my buddies make a fuck ton of money and I'm just kind of like nibbling around saying like, why am I not outperforming them? So it comes down to being honest with yourself. And then when you do so, it's always slow down, size down, even though the market might be up only, but it's the safest thing to do. So that way, you know, when you get closer to the end of the cycle, whatever the blow off top or complex pullback is, you're not as ill prepared to eat drawdown as if you're still trying to figure out your edge or refine your edge. So I think a lot of it has to do with just being honest with yourself and just stepping back or sizing down. If my edge isn't there, I'm just going to have to fuck off for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like earlier in the year, there was a lot of liquidity driven altcoin moves that were like easy to just like run up accounts because that was like a good market to be in. But like right now, altcoins are just not good to be in unless you're short from the top, right? So trading majors is probably the thing that I do. One, there's more liquidity. There's like really not a lot of liquidity in alt perps. But then like just looking at like when to step in or put on more risk, it's probably going to be when the market's trending. Like range bound stuff, less capital, very strict level liquidity trading. But like Zorn's MetaMoku and like trend following systems, like you have much more confidence in like, okay, here's a higher low, like risk is pretty set on this. Like you could tell like when the market is kind of like in a momentum driven manner. And that's like back to what we talked about, like spot driven versus perp driven. So you have to kind of just like constantly look at all these metrics and figure out like where's capital flowing and why, and like where is this hot ball of money in crypto? Like this is crypto in particular. This is not stocks. identifying that is like the key part of the equation for me right now. So it's like Bitcoin and Ethereum are pretty good to trade right now. Solana too, I guess. I haven't traded that, but like any other, I haven't looked at any altcoins in like literally like probably like a month and a half because they're just not worth the time. But there was a time when like, dude, we run Lido up and down, like it's just like way out of favor, right? So all around like how the cycles work in crypto, like typically it's like, okay, Bitcoin rips and then ETH, and then you see the ETH BTC move and then you go to alts. Like, I don't think that really has changed. It's just taking a lot of time, and people who don't have any patience are forcing trades, and that's like the worst thing that you can do. So like for now, it's majors trading for me, basically. And you don't really, like, I'm not using like a large percentage of my capital in the market right now, because it's a survival, it's like a survival mode right now until it changes.
What is the Ichimoku stuff you're talking about? Can you maybe just go into that a little bit more, like the trend following?
Yes. So Ichimoku is a trend following indicator that captures up to 70% of any given trend. It was created by this guy, Goichi Hosoda, in Japan in the 1930s, I believe, trading rice. And it helped him predict which way the price of rice was going to go. So this is one of the first trending indicators I found when I came into the space. This FX guy, Chaos Trader 63, taught Josh Olschwitz, who we know as 33K by July guy, Carpe Noctem on Twitter. And I learned from him. So point being is it's trend following system. And there's two very specific setups that I've used over the past that have kind of helped me catch high time frame bottoms on Bitcoin and ETH. Most famously, I think that people know me for trading with it was 2018 buying ETH at 132. And there was like this edge to edge setup that went all the way to 282 over, 200% move. And this setup is called the edge to edge, where price basically creates a high time frame bottom. Price goes into the cloud at the bottom of it and then comes out the ends on the top right of it, going up and to the right. And this is like a trade that I basically held for, I think, like 2 or 3 months, took it with leverage, paid about, $300-400K in funding fees alone. This was before like futures on ETH were a thing. And this is just something that works so well for me on high time frame, where that I decided this is my bread and butter. I'm not a scalper. I can't read the tape. I'm a discretionary trader, but I know when risk on seems to come and I know how to trade it that way. So the Ichimoku is just basically my system for trading high time frame inflection points.
All right. I just go check it out. I've never heard of it.
It's a free indicator too. Yeah, it's a free indicator on TradingView. Just type in Ichimoku.
I use it.
I just feel like trend following is just you just feel cleaner doing it. Like, it's less stressful. But it's you can't be sidelined for just so long if you're not.
100%. So it's a balance of the two.
Yeah.
I just use daily moving averages, 50, 100, 200. Like, yeah. Decisively losing the 200-day moving average. People call it lagging indicator. Fine. Price goes down, right? Like, trade back above it. Like, that's why Bitcoin's kind of interesting in the sense of like where it went recently, because what the 200-day moving average on Bitcoin right now is, I'm trying to find it.
I think we just topped it.
What is it?
It was a piss butt.
Well, we went below it. We broke above the 50, and then it's been, but the 200-day moving average on BTC is, sorry, I have all these bands on my chart, is, we're holding above it, right? It's 28K. It's a previous week high. So that to me is pretty interesting. Like, you can make an argument that, sure, it was a test pump, but I don't know. You can go higher from here. And, you could go to 42K and then you can go to 23. Like that's not out of the question for me. Like, cause you, whether that was a test pump or not, like, I don't know, it's a pretty big move and we're kind of right. So I guess decisively losing the 200-day moving average again, probably then most likely then you go to weekly open, but then you're kind of trading like back and forth above and below this thing where like, we broke below it on August 18th. Right? We retested it on October 2nd. And then we retested the 50-day moving average after we broke above it on October 11th. And now we're trading back above the 200-day moving average. It's like, okay, like, is something going on here that we don't know about? Because we stayed above the 200-day moving average from March 10th until August 17th. And we broke above it on January 14th. Like, that was, like, the start, right? So is the market telling us something that we don't know? Maybe. So I'm, like, very open to it. But holding above the 200-day moving average right now is pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's essentially bullish in that point, right?
Yeah. So, like, you got to be open to the possibilities. Like, above, like, 29.1, then you might go up and start to test, like, much higher liquidity.
That looks like a good chart to me. I don't know.
I mean, the chart looks good. Yeah, for sure.
It holds up. You got a flat weekly open, though, which is, like...
You have a flat weekly open. It was, like, the most call option gamma on that squeeze to 30K or whatever it was on Binance. Like, to me, that just looks like a very memeable head and shoulders with, like, a blowout wick that ran all the shorts.
That's also... You can paint that, too. These are some good chart painters. These guys went to a good art school, whoever is in charge right now. Everything is, like, real nice and laid out for you in these spots. I guess let's talk about a little bit of losses and gains and how you guys come up back from those. I don't know. Unless, Manda, you got another question real quick?
No.
I thought you were giving me a hand raise here.
No.
I mean, we've all had big losses.
Yeah.
I think, like, when people talk about, like, these gains and losses, you have to understand that it's relative to, like, who the person is, right? Dollar amounts are, like, you just throw out a dollar. Amount, like, it's meaningless, especially for, like, newer traders watching this stuff. Like, you could have a $100,000 account, it's a percentage of what you lost, or $1 million account. It's like, you're gonna, I mean, sure, I've blown up some accounts because that happens, but, like, the dollar amount, like, yeah, I've had some big losses. How do you come back from it? You step off the charts and you, like, mentally reset and you look at what you did wrong, and then you come back and you learn from your mistakes. It's cliche, but, like, that's the only way that this game works, right? So journaling's a big part of it. Zorn journals much more than I do. But I don't know. I think having a balanced trading and another life, like, not sitting at your screens watching price all day long, is, like, how you get more mental clarity and how you become, like, a better, like, well-rounded trader, right? Because once you trust your setup, go do something else, and then let it play out.
And then, like, I also agree, you guys didn't really talk about how you know each other. So, I mean, like, it seems like having a team or someone else to trade with could also help a lot.
Yeah. I mean, we have really close friends who we all trade with and, like, bouncing ideas off of. And we're not an echo chamber. I mean, Zorn and I clearly disagree on some stuff right here. So, I mean, that is a big part of it. Like, finding a community, especially in crypto, whether you learn from your friends or not, it's just, like, communicating market ideas. You can use it as a barometer, or you can take and choose what you want to take from it. Like, it's a healthy thing. 'Cause, like, yes, trading is, like, a solo sport, but it's also, like, nice to be in communities as, like, kind of a team. I mean, we do a weekly stream every week. So for us, it's like, when we stream, like, I don't really prepare anything. It's us just having a conversation, kind of exactly like we're doing now. But yeah, maybe Zorn can kind of touch on that a little more.
Yeah, you know, just about just the losses, how you bounce back. I think the best example is, like, right, 2021 November at the top at 69K. I was, like, uber bullish in that, like, 57, 62K range. I got my ass handed to me down to, like, 42. Up until 42K, I was super bullish. So, you know, I got my ass completely handed to me. And then I think I tried to, like, scalp alts a little bit in January, February. And I realized just the market was just not in a place I wanted to be in. I had no edge. I was literally just hemorrhaging money left and right. So at that point, it's, like, again, being honest with yourself, you just, like, step the fuck back. I literally, like, pieced out from the space. I was, like, overweight also. So I went on to, like, lose a bunch of weight, focus on health, focus on life, focus on, like, mental clarity. And it's really just about going back to the basics, which is, like, creating routine. And like Tripp said, you know, journaling is so important, because if you're not honest with, like, why you're fucking up, are you just, you know, sizing too big every time on your losers and sizing too small on your winners? Like, whatever the prognosis is, you just have to be honest with yourself. And then from there, can you actually put in the work to ameliorate and, you know, improve on those things that kind of helped you or hurt you. So for me, it's just been, I peaced out for about 6-7 months, and then I literally came back right after I heard about FTX, and I was like, okay, it's time to check back in the market. So knowing when to sit out is just as important as knowing when to kind of be risk on and trade. So when you take a big loss, it's actually the most important thing to just like step back, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, I've done it before. I know friends who've done it. Like when you take a big loss, you just take like 7 or 8, even 10, you know, of larger size magnitude losses. So it's important to avoid hemorrhaging further money, because you're only digging the hole deeper later on to come back from.
Yeah. I mean, that's easier said than done. You kind of have to go through it, but.
No, you do. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I feel like I'm never ending going through it at this rate, but here's a good segue into our closing questions, because we're going to be finishing up in a second here. And then doing the roll bit spins. I think we got to do like a monthly episode with two traders like this. So people seem to like it. It was nice. Maybe like a monthly trading episode. We'll have to have you guys back sometime for sure. The closing questions we typically ask is like how to not get wrecked. So, I mean, Zoran, you kind of gave that already, but if you want to touch on a little bit more, then ISO, whatever you have to say on top of that, would be great.
Yeah. So like, I like to be very process driven. You know, we are gamblers, we're traders, but we're glorified gamblers essentially. So you have to focus on the process, not the outcome. The outcome is most of the time random. Yeah. You may have edge one way or another, but focusing on the trade, like the types of trades you're taking, how you're sizing, how you're scaling into it, focus on the process in your system more so than did you win or lose the trade? Because the winning or the losing is outside your control. All you can kind of focus on is the repeatability of the system. So as long as you create and focus on building good habits, good trading habits, I think that's the best way to avoid, quote unquote, being wrecked.
I would just echo that.
There you go. Boom. Honestly. Heard it here first. I mean, it was a great episode, guys. We have the Rollbit spins, like I said, coming up next. I don't know if anyone wants to add anything else before we start that process. Hopefully it goes a little smoother than last week.
No, I think we're good to go. I think we're good to go.
My co-host on Spaces. What's yeah, we'll show you right now. It usually goes really fucking smoothly, except like people don't come on stage. We bring 3 people up on stage. Today we're doing 2 because we missed the person last week. So the dude back in the 1800s is going to get a spin today. He'll be the first spin, and now we're going to get the next 2 people. Please request on Twitter Spaces if you get chosen right now.
Do you want to do the final code, OSF?
Yeah. Yeah, the final code to give away for this show is We Live 1523. All right, so I think we got these spins up. We got the picks up.
All right, let's go. We got the top 2 here. Schwandangle. And Don, the digital Don. All right, somebody help me find these. Whoever's co-hosting, all we right. can do this.
So Schwandangle and digital Don, please request.
If you're tennis guy,
digital Don.
Who's tennis?
I got the digital Don. Oh no, I clicked the wrong fucking person. Whoa, whoa, echo. I accidentally brought the wrong guy up.
Okay, I'll just remove him.
Kick him off.
Yeah, remove
him. I'll catch him. I've removed him.
We got the digital Don, right? I saw him.
Let me have a look.
Schwandangle.
Here we go. Digital Don. Got him. And then
Schwandangle, you got a couple more seconds here, buddy. Anyone see him?
I
know
see
a good him. Hack for this. If you get called, like have a really great profile pic that stands out. So I can see it. All right, the next guy is tennis guy. Tennis guy, tennis yeah, crypto guy.
I'm supposed to play it too.
Big tennis crypto guy. Where's he?
What's the there we go.
Anyone see tennis guy or Schwandangle? Tennis guy, I got him. Nobody move.
Got him?
You got tennis guy? Sweet.
So we got the first roll for the guy last week back in the 1800s or whatever the fuck.
I'm gonna share my screen now.
Okay, that was a little bit smoother. How we doing?
Okay.
And Don.
You guys will see that?
All right, yeah, run it. Here we go. For the back in the 1800s dude from last week.
Okay.
Hopefully he makes it to 2023.
Back in the 1800s. Oh my God.
What? I can't see him with the help. Oh! A golden wreck guy.
You want a golden wreck guy?
Oh my God. Why didn't I
put that
for sale?
Oh, that is
massively overpaid for, but
it's massive. Were you supposed to audit this box, Mando? What the fuck happened here?
That's the cheapest one. That's the floor.
That's the cheapest one, to be fair.
A little bit of lack of liquidity, maybe, in that bit ass spread there.
Hey, price the price, man.
price. Somebody's fucking
paid. The fucking gold ones always trade so high, man.
Wow. Okay, so that's for back in the 1800s from last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much is he going to be able to get for that?
Floor at 1E.
Okay.
Well, if he puts it up next week. This is for the Digital John.
Someone else won.
Potential DGen 3. Congrats, Thanks. Digital John.
Sorry about that. Sorry. Now.
Tennis guy, let's see what you're walking home with. Courtesy of Rollbit.com, our sponsor.
Oh,
we got a robot.
Congrats,
guys. Not a tennis robot, but it is a robot. We got a little echo going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
think that's it, though. Congrats to the winners. Please DM your ETH address to Mando.
DM it. Why don't you DM it to the Rec Radio account? That's probably the
DM it to the Rec Radio account. DM your ETH address, not an exchange address, to the Rec Radio account. Congrats to the winners. We're happy to give away some stuff courtesy of Rollbit. Somebody got paid. Might not have been the person that was on the screen here. I was still on that golden. That guy got paid.
The seller got paid.
Thanks for coming on, guys. Yeah, that was fun. I mean, I think we got to do some more trading episodes like this. It was a good time.
Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Good time.
Absolutely. You guys have anything to promote before we head off? We'll give you the floor for a second. Talk about your YouTube or whatever it was that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I guess we just stream once a week, Tools of the Trade on YouTube. It's pretty much it. We're pretty laid back. We're not big shillers on too many things.
Perfect. Respect that. Respect that.
Actually make money trading sometimes. Yeah.
Perfect. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. And we'll see everyone next week back at 1 p.m. Eastern. We're finally going to be back at the normal time slot. So see you guys then.
Peace.
All right.
Cheers, everyone.